Hey everybody, what's up? Chad Wesley Smith here for the Jug Life Podcast. On this week's episode, I'm joined by Max Ada and Zach Talander, and we take some of your fan questions, as well as discussing some ideas that came up in the recent Starting Strength podcast, their Ripito's take on Olympic lifting, and you know, we were seeing that pop up on Reddit, and just wanted to address the misconceptions that may be created from that. So we go from there, then answer the fans' questions, and then give you a little bit of preview of the upcoming IWF World Championships, where Max will be coaching Team Juggernaut's Alyssa Ritchie. Today's episode is brought to you by BioWave Go. So if you're struggling with pain, use the same opioid-free, FDA-approved way that NFL and NBA players are using to mitigate their pain so you can still train hard. If you're interested in online coaching, visit jtsstrength.com. And check out all our online coaching options for powerlifting, powerbuilding, weightlifting, and super total, especially our AI options for powerlifting and powerbuilding, which are being used by thousands of athletes with fantastic results. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast, hit that little like button underneath the video, give us a 5-star review on iTunes. All that stuff really helps more people find the podcast and more people get this good information. So thanks for watching. Enjoy the episode.
Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
All right, so I am here with Zach Talander and Marvelous Maximum Montana. How you doing, guys?
Max, you go first.
I'm doing well.
I'm doing good, man. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to be on this amazing podcast.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for joining us. And this is almost an emergency podcast, I'd say, because of the release of something called the Olympic Weightlifting episode on Starting Strength Radio.
Yeah, something that if you took me back to 1995, I would, I think that podcast would have existed there as well as here. Like, there's no change in times or anything.
I didn't even realize he had a podcast on it.
Yeah, it just sounded like you could have put like really scratchy VHS video over the top of that podcast, and you'd be like, oh, okay, I'm watching like a phys ed video.
Maybe like an 8mm reel to reel.
Exactly. Yes.
I have seen some Smith's family home movies that we had to watch on 8mm reel to reel, like when my oldest brothers were babies.
Oh wow! But,
that's kind of, you know, gets at the gist of, you know, why the things he said were so wrong. In it Rip talks about how he took his level one in 1989. He kind of leaves that as his weightlifting credentials. I know that there was, you know, Wichita Falls Barbell Club or whatever it is, lifters in like making like a university worlds, maybe one or two of them in the early 2000s. Mm. But as people, you know, both of you and me on occasion, who are actually at nationals, worlds, American Open finals in the back room, you look around and, I have not seen Mark Ripito around there recently.
Yeah, and the thing is, I don't see a starting strength athlete, so it's not like Mark's not showing up just because, you know, he's old and tired. Yeah. It's because he doesn't have anyone to even coach at.
I heard he was going to be in Thailand.
Oh,
albeit,
yeah?
For a completely separate reason than weightlifting, but
more like Robert Kraft type of purposes.
Yeah, for the lady boys.
Yeah,
we talked about that. Max, you got to
couldn't
stay
have
away
been
from
a David Carradine
boys
scenario. That's a little personal, but
so yeah, and to be fair, you know, Tom DeStasio was very much a starting strength disciple and was coaching Mary Peck, who was very, very successful up to the international level. I think was coaching Cecily for a while too, who was also quite successful. So it's not, we can't say that there's literally been no one. There's just been an incredibly small amount of them. And the ideas that he proposes are probably a big reason, you know, why they're not producing
even nationally qualifying lifters.
Yeah.
And I mean, nationals nationally qualifying, not AO series nationally qualifying. But that's a different discussion. So the kind of, you know, pull quote from his whole deal was, you know, why wouldn't you want to pull 700 to clean 405? So besides the fact that both he and Louis Simmons only refer to things in pounds, and that's like number one indication, like, oh, this guy's not around weightlifting very much.
They're not around powerlifting. Come on. I mean, raw powerlifting is in kilos at this point, right? I mean, if you got to go to IPF, you got to know IPF Worlds, you got to know kilos.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably 50-50 on referring to things in pounds and kilos for powerlifting, but you also don't see Mark, Louis, Matt Wenning, Dave Tate, I could go on, you know, in the back room at Big Dogs, Pro Raw, U.S. Open, USAPL Nationals, IPF Worlds, all those good places. But, all right, so, you know, I guess the real question becomes what I want to talk with you guys about first is the role that maximal strength, particularly in the squat and deadlift, can actually play for weightlifters. So this idea that they need to squat, front squat 600, like Matt Wenning has said before, or deadlift 700 to clean 405, so 183 kilos, or 184 kilos, that's what I want to get to. So if you were to make a guess, just in all of USA weightlifting, how many athletes there are that can clean, not clean and jerk, because that's not what these guys are referring to, but just clean 184 kilos or more. How many do you think there are?
I would bet well over 50, maybe between 50 and 100.
I would agree. I was going to say 100.
Yeah, because there's a lot of guys that just, you know, they could clean it in the gym but are much worse of the jerk that we're not seeing at Nationals, but I bet you it's up there.
Yeah,
I would say, it's higher than we think because, again, a gym clean is about as useless as any other thing, you know, because you have to clean and jerk and then you have to do it on the platform. So I actually think there's quite a few of those.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's call it 100 just for the, you know, easy numbers. And, yeah, I agree that it's probably there, if not a little bit higher, particularly when you take into account, like, kind of hobbyist strong CrossFit guys who might do like one weightlifting meet or something. You know, like how many James Townsends are hiding out there. But so you have 100 people who can clean 405 pounds. How many of them do you think can either front squat 600 or deadlift 700?
Front squat 600, zero.
Yeah.
I don't know of any US lifter that's front squatting 600. Maybe like a Kaiser Witt has done 600 and you know, I don't think Damron has done 600. He's probably one of the best squatters in the US.
I think Damron's right there. I think he's done 270.
Oh yeah. Maybe he's right there.
Yeah. It's the weirdest thing. You guys are saying 600 and I know this sounds like a weightlifting elitist, but I literally don't know what that is in kilos. Like
272.
Okay, so 272. Yeah. Okay, I would say, I'd say Damron. I think he's done 260, but maybe not 272.
Yeah, Garcia did 260 a long time ago. Like it's the number is low. It's below three at the absolute highest.
And the deadlift number is probably lower than that.
Yeah,
That one I'm inclined to say zero.
Yeah, I would be willing to bet it's zero. And if not zero, The couple of guys are just guys that either came from powerlifting or are just, you know, they've got a build for that. Like, you know, they just pull.
Yeah, I did see Wes did a very big deadlift as part of that, like, one ton challenge.
Yeah.
I think that he pulled 305 or 310 and it was fairly easy.
Yeah.
But to that point, so if we have, you know, one or two people being able to reach these standards, but, you know, another 98 or 99 being able to do the clean, and the guys who can do those strength numbers, like let's say Wes can pull 700, I think he's probably a little bit short, and that he can front squat 600. Well, he's not doing that to be able to clean 405 pounds, 182 kilos. He's got to be able to clean 225, 500 pounds.
Right.
Yeah.
So the out of touchness with the how strong you have to be. Go ahead, Zach.
So Chad, that's where it starts, and I think the out of touchness, it stems from these guys really having no dog in the fight, and being kind of trapped in the early 2000s. And thinking, so like in the early 2000s, we would get stomped on, and even up till about now. I mean, we're getting destroyed by all these other countries in weightlifting, and the people who we have in weightlifting at that time were both weak in the lifts, meaning the snatch and the clean and jerk, and probably weak in the force lifts or the power lifts, whatever you want to call them. They were probably weak there too. So in an attempt to grasp at some sort of narrative, these guys like Louis, these guys like Rip, were like, oh, it's easy. Weightlifters aren't strong. They can't deadlift 700 pounds. They can't, you know, front squat 500 pounds or 600 pounds. That's why they can't clean well, right? If we want to compete with the Russians, all these guys are horribly weak compared to, you know, powerlifters. It's that simple. And then the sport has evolved so much.
And something that Louis enjoys doing in that is not just comparing them to powerlifters. He'll just compare a weightlifter's numbers to a multiply powerlifter's numbers. Because he did that exact thing in a response to a Mike Tashier article we posted like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
He just made the apples to pineapples comparison.
Well, so let's take that hypothesis that like weightlifters are weak. Okay. But like Louis and Rip and all these guys, none of them have been actually paying attention. They've just held on to that weird old school hypothesis. They're not even looking. Like if I said, hey, Coach Ripito, okay, so you have your issue is people aren't strong enough. Okay, so if you were to name the top six male and top six female weightlifters right now, four of which on each side are going to go to the Olympics, could you actually name any of them, and could you name their numbers, and then also could you name their coaches and their training methodologies? Rip would be like, oh no, I don't pay attention to weightlifting. I'd be like, oh, there you go. Right? So you're the first person to talk about weightlifting as a whole, and yet you don't know anything about it. Let's forget the fact that you don't have a dog in the fight. You don't train any weightlifters. You legitimately are oblivious to the world that you're critiquing. Right? I mean, it's...
Yeah, I think a big part of this, too, is that people like Louis and people like Rip are not involved in the sense that their own experience with weightlifting is so limited, it's difficult for them to draw an accurate conclusion. And it's more like, you know, Ripto's never really done weightlifting as an athlete. Louis certainly hasn't. They've never really coached anyone in the sport. So it's easy to step back from this big picture and look at something and find what appears to be the simplest, you know, the simplest solution, which is, well, you know, lifters are weak. If you were really strong, if you could deadlift 700 pounds, how light would 350 pounds be? Or how light would 400 pounds be? It feels so light. It would be so easy to like to lift this. But anyone who's ever done it knows that that's just not the case, right? It doesn't really matter how strong you are, because we're talking about two very different things, and there's very weak correlation between absolute strength, the deadlift, and the clean and jerk. And without having any real tactile experience doing the sport, they can't relate to that. So they just pick these arguments that are super, super simple, kind of emotional things. It's easy for someone to say, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like, we're just not strong enough. Because if you're really strong, then the weights are lighter. And if the weights are lighter, you could lift more and you'd be a world champion.
Yeah, and I can speak to some of those from my personal experience of being someone who can deadlift a lot. I've cleaned when I was 19 years old, sophomore in college. I cleaned 180 kilos and could probably deadlift maybe 280 kilos, somewhere in that range. I mean, it never really deadlifted. Mm-hmm. We'd do like clean pulls, and I think I'd gone up to like 270. So, should we just go all pounds or all kilos? All kilos the rest of the way.
I hope it stays kilos. All right. At this point, yeah,
it's already confused.
I know, so confused. I'm crossing over a lot here, but So I could clean 180 kilos and deadlift, I'll call it about 280. And, you know, fast forward 5 years and I'm in powerlifting. And at that point I've deadlifted 360 kilos. And I actually did go and clean one day and did 193 kilos. And like, okay, that's a good improvement. But when you weigh 140, 193 kilo clean ain't doing shit for you. And the amount of energy that I had to spend deadlifting to, you know, add those 80 kilos to my deadlift for a whopping 10 on the, you know, on the clean, that I think is where their real misunderstanding, not just of the role of maximal strength and the utility of the deadlift as an exercise for weightlifters, but what I think for Louis particularly, Rip as well, I'm sure, is like a misunderstanding of sport form and how speed characteristics and coordination and everything are required, you know, why that's so significant for weightlifting. So could you guys speak to that a little bit about why training those lifts really heavy can actually disrupt the process?
Well, yeah, Chad, how dare you call Louis or talk about Louis being uneducated as far as speed characteristics go? I mean, we're talking about the guy who invented the conjugate system and
he did invent speed training.
I know. But this is the guy, we're talking about the guy who's like, all he talks, he wants to bring about these incredibly convoluted ideas about speed training and all of these things. Like he founded the use of Soviet styles.
I'm not sure if you're aware, Zach, but the West Side system, the conjugate system as West Side has created it, is actually a combination of Soviet weightlifting and Bulgarian weightlifting.
It's also
and Chinese. And Chinese.
Oh, and Chinese.
I think the Chinese do the West Side system is what I believe is the current stance they take.
The Far East Side system? But, yeah, I mean, he took things that were completely opposite of each other and made them into one thing.
Yeah.
But I rudely interjected. Max, you had an not a facetious one. Sorry.
The simplest explanation is that the ability to display huge amounts of force or strength is not tied to the ability to display that force quickly. And so while you do heavy deadlifting or heavy squatting even, there's, you know, you the speed of muscular contraction, the number of fibers you're recruiting in that time change dramatically from the requirements of a clean and jerk. So, you know, while deadlifting 700 pounds mechanically looks similar to a clean, to portions of a clean, the dynamics of the way the you know, your nervous system is recruiting muscle fibers and the speed of the movement are so different that it is, you know, apples to pineapples. It's not going to have the same level of transference because it doesn't mimic all things or mimic enough things closely enough to actually carry over to your results in the clean.
I agree with Max completely there. And there's, you know, the old cliche works. You're putting the cart before the horse. And if you are to teach, first off, Chad, I read your article on JTS about why the U.S. is bad, or the three-parter, after you posted it to Reddit.
Yeah, that article is 8 years old, for what it's worth.
But it's cool though, because you kind of hit the nail on the head, and not only did you do that, it foretold a probable future of American weightlifting being better. And it really starts with youth and being able to build those qualities, those speed strength qualities. And speed is going to come before the strength. Learning how to use these motor units, but learning how to use them incredibly fast against also relatively heavy weights. That is a skill that needs to happen first. And it takes a long time to develop. And that's why you see youth lifters do better. And why you see you see youth and you see gymnasts come into the sport and do a lot better because they have those skills already practiced. Now, putting the cart before the horse is saying, well, you need to get your maximum strength up so that you can lift more weight in the snatch and the clean and jerk. And that's simply just not the best way to accomplish that thing. When you lift heavy, while you're learning the lifts, you begin to create this correlation between the two of them. You'll say, I have to back squat this before I can snatch this. Or I remember the last time I hit a snatch PR, and my back squat was the best it's ever been. And so now you created this correlation, and now you do kind of what you talked about before, Chad. You waste a ton of energy trying to raise an efficient or relatively efficient back squat up just so you can move your clean and jerk up a kilo or two, when there are much better and scientifically proven ways to do so.
You know, a lot of this, and kind of what I talk about in that article, which if people want to go back and read, it's called Why We Actually Suck at Weightlifting. Again, it's 8 yeah. years old, and it was a response to a J.L. Holdsworth article called Why the U.S. Sucks at Weightlifting. And shockingly, he, as a multiply powerlifter, had very many of the same wrong ideas that Louis yeah. Simmons and Mark Rapoteau have. You guys can go back and read that. And what I talk about in it is the similarities between the U.S.'s, you know, at the time, writing this in 2011, struggles in weightlifting and how they mirror their struggles in the hammer throw,
yeah.
Javelin, and discus. And you know, what Zach was talking about, how you can get this sort of quick result from raising maximal strength and that improving your weightlifting numbers. You can also get that same quick result for raising maximal strength to improve, you know, shot put discus hammer numbers. And that was something that I kind of fell into the trap of as a, you know, as a junior in high school, when my PR in the shot put went up by 10 feet, I was like, well, wow, you know, this is because I put 50 pounds on my bench and, you know, 100 pounds on my squat. I'll just do that again next year and it'll go up another 10 feet. Well, I did get about that much stronger, and surprise, surprise, it didn't go up another 10 feet. And then I kept getting stronger like that again, and it didn't go up another 10 feet again, because, and that maybe is almost like the real takeaway from this idea is, if you want to get like pretty okay slash maybe good, depending on your sort of natural speed qualities, getting really strong is a fast yeah. way to get pretty good. You know, and if I had to choose between two people, one who could deadlift 700 and one who could deadlift 500, and they're like, you have a week to get them to clean 405. Yeah, I'm taking the 700 pound deadlifter. But since that weird Hunger Games of cleans doesn't actually exist, like, it's not, that's not a decision that we have to make. Are there things technically about deadlifting heavy that you feel like can disrupt success in the lifts?
Yeah, I mean, the start position is different. If you're going to pull conventional deadlifts, it's a different position. This is a big point of contention with Rapoteau, where they're dead set. That camp is dead set on the idea that, you know, the clean and the conventional deadlift start positions look the same, and they pick so many different people they reference this way and that way, and it's just not. It's not the same. I mean,
I thought the start positions looked like low bar squats.
I think that's the snatch. The snatch is the low bar squats for the snatch.
Too,
the deadlifts for the clean. I believe that's the way that works. And then the bench press is for the jerk.
And but the low bar, there's a low bar overhead squat as well.
Yeah, the low bar Zercher squat is just or the low bar front squat is a Zercher squat. Yeah, I mean, the start position is different. The balance of pressure on the foot is different. The initial motor impulse is different. You're not pulling super hard off the ground in the clean necessarily. Not everybody does. And you know, in the deadlift, like, those things are probably much more homogeneous. People are doing basically the same things in the technique on all of those. The tempo of the lift is different. The intent right off the ground is different. It's just a very different thing. And while it seems like from the outside and to the layman or the Rapoteau, you know, like, these are the same, they look the same, so they are the same, it's easy to see where they get, you know, they get caught up in that. It's like, you know, oh, it's like basically the same. Look, here's a picture of Steiner. His shins look the same as this guy, and boom, 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 boom. One thing is the next, and there you go.
Yeah, there's your correlation and causation in one.
Yeah.
I agree with Max. I mean, it's the technicality of the deadlift is way under the technicality of the clean. And not only that, every type of deadlift, sorry, the deadlift that you can do in weightlifting would be a clean deadlift. So you would set up the same way you would in a clean. You'd wear, you know, weightlifting shoes, which are higher heeled. You'd set up with your shoulders over the bar, and you can deadlift, right? You don't have to have that explosive top of the pull, and you still are deadlifting. Like, yes, you're not entering a powerlifting meet, but that's not the point, right? So I think that pulling heavy from the floor can be used in a training program, and I think it should, but not with the goal of pulling the most humanly possible from the floor.
Yeah, I think that becomes the biggest issue with all of this, is that really what's being said is that there's an easier way to get strong, or there's an easier way to your results. There's a shortcut by just becoming stronger in something that's more basic and simple. You know, if you squat a big weight or you deadlift a big weight, then that equals somehow a big clean and jerk, or I guess a big clean in this case. But it's just not, it's not the case, right? And the idea sounds so enticing to believe that if you just improve your squat another 20 or 30 kilos, your deadlift another 20 kilos, then the same thing is going to be an equal response in the clean and jerk. And Chad's story obviously sums up why that, you know, a great example of that not happening, where, you know, an increase in general strength initially had a good result, but then there was no improvement beyond that. And that's like the heart of this issue, is that you can achieve high results, or you need to be strong to achieve high results, by doing something that is not specific to the actual sport.
Yeah. And I think that is the real takeaway here, is front squatting a lot good? Of course. Is having a huge deadlift, you know, conventional or clean deadlift, a bad thing? No, certainly not. But it's the pursuit of those goals as the primary goal that's the problem. Yep. If you can clean deadlift 700 pounds by a byproduct of well-planned training that takes into account developing speed qualities and technical qualities, awesome. You're probably really fucking good at weightlifting then.
Yeah, you're really, really good, yeah.
But to the other side of it, if you can deadlift 700 pounds, 317 kilos, and you can front squat 600 pounds or 272 kilos, and you only clean 405 pounds, 184 kilos, you fucking suck at cleans. Like, you should be doing way more.
Yeah.
If you could front squat 272, I mean...
Holy
220
shit.
Minimum, yeah. Probably clean.
Yeah, and imagine like training for a 272 front squat if you weren't like, you know what I mean? Like, imagine trying to get your front squat to that level.
I have. It is an
enormous. Have to imagine it.
It is an enormous amount of work, and the qualities that are going to produce a 700 or a 600 pound front squat and the training that would go into it, the most effective way to do that is in contrast to the best methods to become a great weightlifter. It's a way too much distribution of your training towards squatting. The training you're going to do towards that squatting is going to be is going to be somewhat negative to the speed components of the lifts. So like, you know, it's like doing shitloads and shitloads of squatting really heavy or for a lot of volume or whatever consistently again and again and again in the attempt to try and build a big squat is going to have a really bad result on a really bad impact on your clean and jerk. And so, like, yeah, it is bad. It doesn't work.
Yeah. So if you're interested in going more in depth on these topics, guess what? We have a lot more stuff about this. You can refer to past Jug Life episodes, episode number 84, which is a Q&A episode called Bench Press and Deadlift for Weightlifting. You can refer to episode number 139, which is called Upper Body Training for Weightlifters, where we talk about this similar type of problem in regards to the press and how it can impact positively or negatively how to include upper body training to maximize your strength in the jerk. You could check out our YouTube videos about general training for weightlifting or our two-part series from Max on developing leg strength for weightlifting. And we talk ad nauseum, really, about all of these topics. The last thing I want to say for this section of things is you know, I mentioned where Louis always says American weightlifting coaches. What the fuck does that mean? Yeah. Because in several of their stories, tall tales, whatever they may be, of like, oh, when I went to the Olympic Training Center, this and that, the time period they're referring to is like when Dragomir Siroslan was the U.S. weightlifting coach. And right. He came from Romania. And I don't think as soon as he, you know, went through customs, they're like, sir, we're going to need to confiscate all your European weightlifting knowledge now that you're in America. Or when Zygmunt Smalsertz came from Poland. Or, you know, we have
the list it's endless. Yeah. The amount of influences from Soviet and Eastern Bloc training. Like, it's endless.
Yeah. And really none of those coaches, granted, many of them were in the OTC setting. It's not like there's not people who came up through European systems or Asian systems for weightlifting or, you know, Cuban systems or whatever, who aren't coaching people here in the United States. And if they fucking knew that much more than everyone else, guess what? Their teams would be dominating and they're not.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just the idea of American weightlifting coaches say this or American weightlifting coaches say that. Hey, America and American weightlifting, it's a fucking melting pot. So we got people from all over, and they don't have all the answers either. So to categorize all American weightlifting coaches as of one mind is just another thing to show how out of touch that situation is. So make sure folks go refer to those other podcast episodes, refer to those YouTube videos, and we go more in depth on that stuff. I'll try and remember to link them down in the notes. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back with Max and Zach, we're going to take some questions from all of you.
If you train hard like me, chances are something probably hurts. So if you're living with chronic pain in your back, your shoulder, hip, neck, or knee, BioWave Go is going to be able to help you out. Superior pain relief technology for people that are serious about training, serious about living a pain-free life. Patented, FDA-cleared, 100% drug-free pain relief technology currently used by many, many professional sports teams. I've been struggling with some sciatica, and the BioWave Go has been really useful to me to knock down some of that pain, to be able to allow me to get some quality training in, to relieve some pain that may arise after the training. So if it's working for me, it can work for you too. It works by blocking pain deep at the nerve for up to 24 hours from just one 30-minute treatment. And if you've been living in pain, you know that can be a life-changing thing. So if you want to be able to lift, jump, run, play with your kids, whatever it is, just run errands without pain, then do yourself or someone you love a favor. Learn more at BioWaveGo.com and speak to a pain relief concierge. Try BioWave Go with a no-risk 30-day money-back guarantee plus free shipping. If it works for professional athletes, it's going to work for you. Visit BioWaveGo.com. That's BioWaveGo.com.
All right, so we are back, the Jug Life podcast with podcast. Max. Yeah, got a little lispy over here, and just going through puberty, guys. Sorry about that. And with Max Ada and Zach Tellender. So the first question that I want to take or give to you guys is from at Mam Hodley. I shouldn't really bother with trying to pronounce some of these Instagram handles, but he asks, what strength and mobility test do you recommend before starting to lift? So really the gist of that I want to get is how, when you get a new athlete, how do you go about assessing that athlete's needs?
Well, I mean, if it's somebody you see in person, I mean, I guess online it's the same, but you know, obviously any video reference you have of them lifting, and then the things that I would say the fastest way to identify the quality of somebody's mobility or the state it's in is the overhead squat. You can tell pretty much most of what you're going to tell from someone's overhead squat. You know, if they can hit depth properly, if their shoulders are moving in the right place, if the bar is in front or behind, etc. That would be like the initial. That if I could only do one thing, I would say look at someone's overhead squat for sure.
Yeah, the prerequisite to playing hockey is being able to skate around before you can, you know, use sticks and a puck and play the actual game. And I think that if you want to snatch, you have to be able to be in a bottom position. And so there's a lot of things that go into the bottom position. I don't want to go into exactly what they are because that could be a little bit, you know, lengthy. But I would say the bottom position of the snatch. And then as far, I think the other part of the question was about strength too, right, Chad? It was
like, yeah.
So strength, again, it's all determined on your ability to hold your positions. So that's just determined on the athlete's movements. So I just teach them the positions, and the main one being the one that Max brought up, which is the bottom position. So I teach them that. Then I would teach them the pull. And at any point, if they're not able to hit those positions in succession, it's lack of strength or lack of whatever. So then the load needs to go down. And then if they're able to hit that, then the load needs to go up. That's kind of the determining strength portion.
Yep.
And if people want to go with a little bit more on that as far as the overhead squat, guess what? We've got a YouTube video for that with Dr. Quinn Hennock. It's called Improving Overhead Squat Movement. So go and watch that. To kind of build off of that question, what are some ways, and we had this type of question from a couple different people, how to improve your overhead stability for the snatch and the jerk?
I would say the first and simplest method is to start including some kind of like pause movements in the bottom of the overhead squat, pause in the snatch, like spend extra time in the positions that you're bad at, that you're not stable in, with obviously your lower intensity ranges. And then once you've done that and, you know, started to implement that, you could also include some separate workouts that actually are entirely just things like strength exercise for the snatch, like a snatch push press, snatch press, drop snatches, you know, overhead squats, snatch bounce, all of those exercises would come secondary to that, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that I would call those like load preparation type of movements, Max. Kind of like the snatch push press is really great because you're and the emphasis should be early on. I like incorporating those early on with holds, like you said.
Yeah.
Because the emphasis should be on that like forcibly locked elbow position. And forcibly, you know, the scaps pulled together and really holding that position and getting your joints and tendons prepared for improvements in the snatch. If they're not prepared, you're basically setting that point at which technique is going to break down earlier.
Yeah.
So a lot of those things are really important to prepare, and they're very awkward positions. I think that, you know, a typical gym bro doesn't really force lock their elbows. And the typical gym bro doesn't do much overhead work. So I think it's important to really build those strength, those aspects, early on. So, right. Yeah. The question was mainly overhead stability, right?
Yeah. And I think people be well served here as well to refer to episode I already mentioned, episode number 139, upper body training for weightlifters. And we talk, Max and I talk a lot in that one about, you know, why some of these CrossFit competitors, a lot of our female competitors, are so good in the jerk, and it's coming from their background of handstands, handstand pushups, handstand walks.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. Absolutely. Like the gymnasts in general, so I put kind of CrossFit and gymnastics in the same category. If you're really good at CrossFit, like regional, not, I guess they don't have regional, but high level CrossFitter, you are doing handstands. You're doing all these gymnastics movements. And these positions are like essential for a lot of like human performance. So girls like Alyssa, Alex, who else is on the women's team? That's Q did gymnastics and she did CrossFit.
Christy was a CrossFitter. I think pretty much every one of our women's weightlifters was a CrossFitter.
Yeah. Right. And it makes a lot of sense. They have the upper body power. And something I noticed with, like, I talk about the elbows again, but it's very strange. Like, if you look at a gymnast, they have these elbows that are incredible. And they can just snap them locked.
Tellender's an elbow man here. I think we're verging on fetish territory now.
No, it's just, you know why? It's because it's like,
I've been watching a lot of Mindhunter, I guess. Let me stop here. I've been watching a lot of Mindhunter, so I feel like I'm qualified to profile serial killers and whatnot, and I'm pretty confident in my assessment here, Mr. Tellender.
How many elbows do you have in your freezer right now?
Right? I'm an elbow guy. No, I'm onboarding a lot of guys to the Texas A&M weightlifting team, and it's just such a huge problem. Getting the bar overhead and trying to pull the scaps together and then lock the elbows. Yeah. So I've been eat, sleep, dreaming elbows, guys. Yep. Okay? And if I
more evidence, more evidence.
Yep. You want to slide in Coach ZT's DMs with just maybe a tastefully done elbow shot.
Please
some
don't.
Some nice
please
lighting.
God, don't.
He prefers Indian elbows, Indian men's elbows.
Okay, next question. Let's go.
This is one that kind of ties back into our earlier discussion, I think. And so anyone who does the club weightlifting, master's weightlifting programs through Juggernaut, you know, I see this question all the time. It's like, you're asking for us to do 115%. So you base the percentages of squats in the program off of the athlete's clean max. What made you start doing that? Why is that significant?
Yeah, I mean, that was a change. I mean, I'd always seen programs written like that years and years and years ago. And some people probably, I don't know if people still do that, but it was a big change for me where I realized that, you know, there's from a purely practical standpoint, it doesn't necessarily do anything different. But from you know, whether it's 100% of your clean and that number equals 80% of your squat, you know, if it's the same 100 kilos, 100 kilos, 100 kilos. But from a big picture perspective, I think to get athletes focused on the concept and the idea that cleans are an accessory movement, right? We don't base pulls and pulling movements and jerks and other accessory movements off of their one rep max relative to the lift. We base them off the actual lift because we know that certain intensity zones, certain weights have a connection, a special connection to the lift. And it's important for us to kind of present that to athletes so they realize that, hey, you know, cleans or squats are something that is secondary to cleans.
Earlier you said cleans are an accessory movement. You
front meant squat. Oh, sorry, yeah. Front squat. Yeah, my bad. So, like, you know, front squats are an accessory to cleans. You do front squats after you do cleans as a movement to improve the performance of your clean. Putting an enormous energy and emphasis on squatting itself, where it has basically this, almost like it can take on this, like, third contested lift sort of placement in people's minds, where squatting becomes its own sport. And an enormous energy goes into it. People are forced into this idea, like, oh, I gotta bring my squat up to bring my clean up. If you see your programs all the time and the weights are based off your clean and jerk, it immediately puts perspective into it that this is a movement that is, you know, an accessory to the main movements. In addition to that, the from a programming standpoint, you know, one thing we're looking to do is we want to know what squats are actually beneficial to our lifts, and we want to increase the number of squats that we know are going to be beneficial to raising the results of the clean and jerk. And, you know, so we have that line, you know, that we know where that intensity range is. It's about 100% of your clean. If we increase that volume of those squats, we'll see an increase in results. We don't need to simply tell people, hey, do squats that are, you know, at 70 to 80%. That should be about 100% of your clean and jerk. We can just say 100% of your clean and jerk, and we're already targeting that for a big group of people. So with a universal program, it does a good job of that.
I think it's a useful way to kind of preempt or preclude those people who are very strong in the squat relative to their lifts from spending unnecessary energy You know, if say you had someone who could squat 250, but they can only clean 120, now they don't need to waste energy essentially in the squat.
Yeah.
Dealing with percentages based off of 250, they need to have reserved that energy for for more cleans and better quality cleans and snatches.
That's also one of the biggest pieces, is that it gives a sense of, it right away adjusts that difficulty of those exercises for the person individually.
I would like to answer this with an answer that doesn't have to do with elbows, if that's okay with you guys. Being a taller person with an efficient clean relative to the front squat, I think this style is incredibly helpful for me. One of the things that Max and I talk about all the time is building fatigue in the clean and jerk, and how dependent on the body type that you are or how efficient you are, it's an incredibly arduous task. When you want to improve the snatch, you can program high frequency and relatively high intensity snatch sessions. With the clean and jerk, it's not that way at all, I think. You have to be able to build fatigue safely, and you really have to have tough clean and jerk sessions, or maybe clean sessions, so that you can compete better. The way that I was able to accomplish this in the last, competitive, I guess you could say, realization or peaking phase, was to maybe do a couple clean and jerks at a higher intensity, anywhere from 85 to 95% or 80 to 95%. And then instead of trying to build that fatigue from doing more and more cleans, I would do sets of front squats based off of numbers relative to my clean. And I really did feel the difference in the long run. My heaviest clean was 175, and that was going, or sorry, my heaviest front squat was 175 going into my meet. And it was pretty difficult, but I didn't really front squat that heavy. And then I clean and jerked 169. So it's not that I needed to go and be like, okay, I have to front squat at least 115% of my, clean. I can just have these types of sessions, and it helps tremendously.
And before we move on to the next question, for new listeners or people who aren't as familiar with Max and his background, I want to make sure to reiterate this point. When Max is talking about, the importance of the squat compared to the clean, this is coming from the most experienced point of view in this regard. So that Max did Bulgarian style of training for over a decade, front squatting multiple dozens of maximum front squats per week, every week for over a decade, training with Ivan Abajayev, the creator of the Bulgarian system, front squatting 272 kilos at 90 kilos body weight, 600 pounds at 200 pounds body weight, doing the things with the person who created this idea that Louis Simmons, Mark Ripito, so many other people want to talk about, that they think that they know about, they think they understand, because maybe they read an interview or an article, or they heard this second hand, third hand, fourth hand, whatever. Max trained like that. He saw it. He lived it. And that's not how he coaches Team Juggernaut's weightlifters. Maybe he knows a little bit fucking better than you do, and you think that you need to train that way because you read an article about it. Just let that sink in.
Yeah, I want to come back in here and say that a lot. Like, I've criticized Ripito, whether it be on Instagram, YouTube, or these guys who are saying these things. One, because I've actually learned from Max, like you said, Max of all people should be agreeing, being like, Americans need to squat more. And here he is disagreeing with that. And one thing I'm seeing is, like, it's kind of cyclical. This idea of maximum strength carrying to the lifts is coming back around. And I think it's our jobs as influencers, which is a term that I absolutely dread, as people of influence in this community that can actually benefit it. It's important for us to squander that shit. Like, I know that it's petty. Like, a lot of people were
squash, I was like, that, I think.
A lot of people, I said, you know, I want to make a video on this on the YouTube channel. And a lot of people were like, don't even waste your time, man. You know what I mean? And in my opinion, it's like, this is something that's worth it, because this type of talk affects the new generation of weightlifters. These kids are going to see this in their high school gym, and they're going to squander away or squash away potential.
Well, that was the right use of it there. But
the potential to build the qualities that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And they're going to do it because jackasses like Louis and Ripito are saying, well, you better, you know, deadlift 700 pounds if you want to clean a jerk anything in this world. Like,
yeah, I'm sure that there are a lot of people listening to this being like, oh, Juggernaut guy's talking shit on Rip and Louie again. You know, what's new? We're not saying this for you. We're not saying this for the people who already know. We're saying this for the people who don't know.
Yeah.
You know, if you already know, then skip ahead. You've already been saved. All right. We're trying to save the other people who don't know yet.
I'm coming up with these. That's we awesome. Are like, yeah, we're trying to save you from the evils of this world. Yeah. And then the JTS listeners have all been saved, and now it's their duty to spread the good word.
Yes.
That's not heavy.
All right. Our final question for this section from Ted Gunham on Instagram. What is something that you have changed your mind about over your years of coaching?
Max, you go first.
What is something other than what we just got done talking about? The biggest thing I think that, and I don't know if it was something I changed my mind about a lot versus that I've kind of learned, is just kind of how significant and how important the coach-athlete relationship actually is, and the ability to, you know, relate to your athletes, but also the ability to, like, not the ability, but the act of really caring about what you're doing and trying to do, you know, something simply for the sake of doing a great job, because that means a lot to you. And I think when I was younger, I kind of didn't know the importance of that. And I maybe thought, oh, that's not as important as, you know, the program or the this or the that. But that intangible stuff, I think, is what is probably a bigger portion of the whole puzzle than I had thought, you know, a long time ago.
Max, have you read Conscious Coaching by Bartholomew?
Yes. Yeah. Definitely a book that I would highly recommend. And a lot of that, the beginning of that, right? The great quote is, no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And past Jug Life guest, episode number 130, Brett Bartholomew.
Yes. Yeah. That was a good one.
I would say, you know, the main thing I've learned is my training has affected my coaching, and my education has affected my coaching, and my coaching has affected my coaching. And those are three of the pillars that Max always talks about. If you want to be a good coach, you either have to have done it yourself, which doesn't necessarily mean go to a world meet, but you'd have to have, improved your snatch and the clean and jerk over a long period of time. You would have had to have done it with others, which just means taken someone and improved their clean and jerk and their snatch over a longer period of time. And you would have also had to have educated yourself in some form or fashion. Doesn't necessarily mean getting a USAW level 1 and 2. It simply means trying and purposefully building your knowledge base, no matter what, how successful or unsuccessful you are. And the one thing that's changed in my mind is how important training has been for me, because I get this, I can equate it to like a martial artist. The number one guy who's not going to kick anyone's ass in a bar is the guy who knows he could kick everyone's ass in the bar. And it's the more successful you get in your own training, the more that you don't have to prove to yourself or to others how good you are or how much better you've gotten, the more you can kind of express more solid training principles. for me, I used to program way too heavy of intensities, way too far away from competition, because I needed to know that I was capable of these things. And as I've gotten more and more experience, I don't have to do stupid shit like that. I don't have to kill myself with a heavy ass front squat, or I don't have to tell myself, okay, I have to hit, you know, my opener for a set of two or a triple. You know, I'd like to do it, but it doesn't much matter because competition is what it's all about for me. And so, to put it all together, really, it hasn't been one particular thing. It's just been a slow burn of like competing and training and competing and training that has changed my mindset more than anything.
Great. All right. We're going to take another quick break. And when we come back with Max and Zach, we're going to be talking about the upcoming IWF World Championships.
If you're interested in online coaching for powerlifting, weightlifting, super total, powerbuilding, visit jtsstrength.com. You can either do one of our club programs for weightlifting and super total, our AI training for powerlifting and powerbuilding. We also offer one-on-one options for all of the above with truly expert coaches, people who have competed at a high level, who have coached at a high level, who have educated themselves to be able to help every lifter from beginner, intermediate to advanced, big, small, strong, weak, whatever it is. We have a program that is right for you. So come to the real experts, Juggernaut Training Systems, Team Juggernaut, for all your online coaching needs.
All right, the Jug Life Podcast is back. I am joined by Max Ada, Zach Thielander. I know I keep saying it wrong, Zach. How do I say it
again? You said it right like three or four times. Thielander.
Thielander. All right. I'm just picking one of the three pronunciations I have in my mind and hoping that one of them, that I'm picking the right one. Thielander. And Zach Thielander here on the Jug Life Podcast. We are going to talk about the upcoming IWF World Championships, just give you some quick thoughts, some predictions. So in 10 days from when we're recording this, Max, you are going to be on a plane to Japan for the Team USA camp, getting your athlete Alyssa Ritchie ready.
Yep.
So you're definitely going to have the most, you know, firsthand experience of what's going on. What are you looking forward to about Worlds, and specifically for Alyssa?
You know, the big one is trying to, you know, we have a list of goals and objectives that are most important. First is obviously making a total, or making weight, making a total, and then at least matching or slightly exceeding what we did at Pan Am's as a sort of locking in the ability to maintain our position on the list. And then from there, it's just a matter of, you know, bringing the absolute highest total back that we can. You know, with Alyssa, talked a lot about us basically, you know, we have a pretty solid agreement, understanding of what we need to do, what we're going to do. And then also being okay with whatever happens, so that we walk in there knowing that, hey, we came to win, we showed up to do this, and, you know, if we fall short of that, that's okay, but we have this great understanding of that's our mission there. Outside of that, I'm excited to see, hopefully there's some changes in the performances from 2018 with the really, like, aggressive drug testing that's been going on. I would imagine it's going to have an impact on some countries, probably not a lot on others, but, you know, there could be some really awesome, it would be kind of like, unfortunately, not as stellar lifting from the rest of the world, but maybe that drug testing is going to impact it a little bit. And it might seem like there's a little more light at the end of the tunnel for us, you know, with countries kind of not living up to their traditional bests. And then I would say the last thing I'm most excited about outside of her is, and outside of that, is Ilan just showing up and doing something. I think no matter what he does, it'll be interesting. So, yeah, we'll see.
He does seem to be rounding right? into a bit more right? form lately.
I feel
he
like he's
180 block snatch.
He's going to do – it's either going to be like hard to watch, you're like, oh man, really, like the guy who like can't let go, or it's going to be something that you're like, oh, okay, well, he's gotten into grandpa's cough medicine again, I guess.
let's see how long he cannot get cough.
He's just going to literally, he'll finish his third clean and jerk and fucking run off the platform. Just full-on sprint to the airport.
Grandpa's cough medicine.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know.
I guess I haven't been paying attention to the show. Does Max say that a lot?
I don't recall that specific phrase, but
I'm tearing up over here. I'm sorry.
But yeah, definitely for Ilya. I mean, I'm excited, interested for that, because as much as I do enjoy, you know, or do appreciate IWF taking steps to catch people who are using drugs, Ilya lifting a lot of weights does not affect my life in any way.
Yeah.
You know, I want Team USA to do well. I want the U.S. to win medals. More so than any of that, I want Alyssa to do well.
Yes.
So it's most important to me that 49-kilo women who are using drugs get caught.
Yes.
96-kilo men? I think
we let it slip. You know, like, let's go full lab rat mode.
And they could catch everyone else, but, like, let's just catch Ilya after, you know, give him another retroactive positive. Let me just see what can happen.
Yeah.
You know, let me just be like, Ilya, we're going to pop you retroactively again, but in the meantime, put on a motherfucking show.
Yeah, and if he wants to put on a show, Max, or Chad, I think we got to bump him up to, like, 109.
Oh, full okay. 109. I think 200, 260 as a full 109.
Full
That's
109,
all we want.
Full, and I want complete access to all of his training videos on YouTube. With techno playing in the background, as always.
He's breakdancing in between sets.
Yes, I want all of it, okay? Just give him all of Grandpa's cough medicine and all of the, you know, the truck driver methamphetamines, and let's see this guy train, okay?
So,
too much to ask?
So, Max, for the 99.9% of listeners here and American weightlifters and American weightlifting coaches who don't get to participate in the team camp in Japan and then traveling for Worlds, give us a little bit of insight to what that process is like, considering you did that last year with Alyssa from Germany to Turkmenistan.
Yeah, so this is a pretty good policy, I think, on USAW's part, is to acclimate the athletes to the travel. The reason we did it in Turkmenistan was because the trip there was so long, you're not really sure what the food quality is going to be. So, you know, it was like, let's gather together for a week. Everyone does their last week of training prior to the competition in Germany with the German team. Then we fly there and compete. And I believe they're going to do the same thing. They did the same thing in Guatemala, but they did it there where they would fly people right before they competed. And then they could fly them out again, so you're not stuck there the whole time. For this, for Thailand, I imagine Thailand's will be fine. Some Pattaya, so it's, you know, like a really nice resort. But it's a good chance for everyone to kind of come together. I think it's nice because that last week, some people are training really heavy. They're taking their last heavy lifts, spot a lot of the bigger people for sure. But it's a good chance to get everyone focused on the task at hand, which is the Worlds and what they have to do there, and giving them that extra, I guess, like isolation from normal life. They can kind of relax and focus on that stuff better. Plus it's a chance to give everyone, you know, the opportunity to meet each other and participate as a team and build some of that, you know, team atmosphere and camaraderie, even though that's not like a huge part of weightlifting. We'll fly in, train in, at Waseda University, with, I assume the Japanese national team will be there, and if not them, at least like a university team. And, you know, it's a good chance to make these connections, I think. So
you'll be in Japan for, what, five days?
I believe, yeah, Japan for 5 days, and then we're flying, Alyssa and I are the first ones, so we'll fly from there to Thailand about 2 days before the competition, probably have our last, like, warm-up session, and then compete.
Now, right. Max, why isn't it all in Thailand? Like, a lot of countries are, you know, in the training hall prior for like 7 days or something.
Yeah. So the main reasons are, and the reason
like camaraderie.
The reason we did it in Germany is because we were really aware of the conditions in Germany. so we knew what to expect. They put everyone up in this like kind of long-term stay hotel with like a really good, like, you know, really high quality food and everything. So there was nothing like out of the ordinary. In Thailand, we're definitely not going to go train with the Thai team. So right. They set themselves up with a team, you know, Japan. I don't believe Japan's ever had a drug positive. And so, you know, they're putting themselves in a place where we know exactly what we're going to get in Japan. It's also where the Olympics will be. So it gives people a chance to, you know, I guess get used to what Japan is, even though it's not really in the same exact place. But, that's the basic plan, is to kind of give you a get into the best possible situation. You know, if it was in somewhere else, I don't know if they would, you know, if they would put a camp for a week in somewhere like Belarus. We would probably do it again in somewhere like Germany or something like that, would be my guess.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, just meeting the Japanese coaches and
athletes. And Germany was cool because we had a chance to actually talk with the German coaches. I spoke with them for a bit, and that was cool. You know, it's a good chance to learn some different things and get a different perspective, and you see stuff that, you know, maybe corroborates some things you had thought, or maybe completely is very different than your experience, or you're different than your perception of how things are.
Now, do you think if USAA Weightlifting would have been aware of the abundance of golden barbells and Guinness World Record holding white marble buildings in Turkmenistan, including the world's largest indoor Ferris wheel, do you think that they would have been more inclined to have the camp there?
I think so. I think it would have been – I almost wonder if they could have arranged some kind of bicycle parking lot target practice, pistol shooting arrangement for us there. It's a national sport, I think.
If you have not watched the episode – of Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, in which he talks about the president of Turkmenistan.
Oh my god!
Highly suggested.
Yeah, I gotta see that. Did you guys have an episode talking about this exact experience that Max had
with Turkmenistan? I probably talked about it before, but
yeah, we for sure talked about last year's Worlds in an episode, but I didn't find these things specifically, like the video of the Turkmenistan president riding a bicycle while shooting a pistol at targets. Well, not actually shooting it, but pretending to shoot at these targets and hit all these targets with a voiceover saying, you know, our supreme, I think they say supreme leader, which I know is a North Korean thing, but I think they're saying the supreme leader is proficient in all sorts of weapons. You know, he is a master of shooting even while, you know, navigating on a bicycle. Yeah, so we've got these worlds coming up. They're a hugely important part of the Olympic qualifying process. So, Max, if you could kind of contextualize the role that these worlds play in Olympic qualifying for U.S. athletes specifically.
So this is a gold. Yeah, this is a gold level meet. So Robies are worth 110% of whatever you score. It's the second to last gold. The last gold meet's going to be the Pan Ams 2020. And basically after this meet, you'll have a really good grasp on who's not going to make the team. Not necessarily everybody, but you're going to, you know, people that don't perform here, that drop down a lot, may be kind of out of the running. Anyone who has a really bad meet here is probably not going to be in a very good place. But basically, you know, man, the Roby system. To sum it up, you know, you have to basically score as high a place as you can here, score as many Roby points as you can to bring your absolute ranking in the world stage up high enough that you get selected for the team. So
yeah,
this is one chance to do it, and then the last one is Pan Am 2020.
Yeah, so the gist of it is if you don't lift well here, you're almost definitely not going to the Olympics.
Yeah.
If you guys want to check out episode number 134, called How Do You Qualify for the Olympics in Weightlifting? Max and I explain this to the best of our abilities, which is a very complicated, convoluted system.
Yeah.
But so as you guys are weightlifting coaches, of course, but also weightlifting fans, what classes, what lifters, U.S., international, are you most excited to see compete?
Well, I think it's It's interesting to see. It's kind of a mystery, right? Because, you know, jumping around from weight class to weight class is really weird. It's something that I don't think we've seen too much before. But there are a substantial amount of, you know, people trying to make the Olympics, and there's only a few ways to do that. Max, you said that you have to have had competed in the weight class you're going to at the Olympics. How many times?
At least twice out of six meets.
Right. So I'm interested to see where these people are going to shake out, like where, you know, internationally for sure. I think we have a good idea of where the Americans are going to be. But I think people I'm excited to see, obviously Kate Nye, she's been on fire lately, and I'm excited to see how, you know, Maddie responds, if she's able to respond. I mean, I think she has to pretty much throw a Hail Mary to make this team.
And I think it's our expectation is to see Kate Nye lift as a 76 kilo at the Worlds.
Yeah. Well, no.
I was under the impression she was going to 71, but if she goes 76 gives her significantly lower Roby points.
You were saying
for the same total.
If she wants to make sure she beats Maddie, would just go, right? Like, she would go whatever weight class it is and try to outlift Maddie, and then she would secure her spot.
Yeah, I mean, she's already high. The only thing that could happen is, I believe, if Maddie does a 70-71 total and significantly outpaces her on Robies, you know, and brings her Robies high enough to move up in the rankings. And I don't actually can't say this second exactly what both of their Robies are. Nye is definitely up there. She may be higher than Maddie. But it would give Maddie a chance. If Nye went 76, Maddie could, as a 71, potentially move herself into a great position. And then it would come down to the Pan Am 2020 for sure.
And I at least had heard some rumblings of a 64 kilo Maddie Rogers being a possibility.
I had heard that too, but I don't know if we'll see that.
That's very much a stuck between a rock and a hard place situation, where the rock is Kate Nye and the hard place is Maddie Sasser.
Yeah, of course. I mean, Maddie Sasser went off in Pan Am games. Everyone did. So it just puts more pressure on this meet. I think there's just more people doing very well, which is awesome for American weightlifting, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't think we can stress that enough.
Yeah. I'd like to see CJ's performance. I know he'll do well. And I think it'll be one of those ones where it's like, he's really kind of fighting for something, not necessarily, maybe not on total, but that clean and jerk is going to be a great battle. And then obviously Nye and everyone is a very good lifter, obviously, on the U.S. side. Internationally, I think Lasha is the number one thing that we want to see.
Yeah,
it's a pre-Olympics year. This would be the one that he's going to smash something huge at if he's going to do it.
And this is traditionally the pre-Olympics year world championships is the biggest world championship. So this was 2015 in Houston.
Yep, massive numbers.
Yeah, there. Yeah. And it might be the kind of thing where, you know, it's traditionally been big because of team points, but now it may be even more ridiculous because individual placings matter more. So, you know, lifters that are, you know, more aggressive are going to be let loose here. So he would be definitely one to see.
And he just did, 219, 255 at a meet a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
At Georgian Nationals, I believe it was... I thought it was 60.
Yeah, I mean, 260. My guess is he would do something in the range of like 219, 220, and like a 260-ish clean and jerk. I don't think we're going to see a 270 clean and jerk. But
if he can go 221, that'll push his own record.
Yeah, and you don't know what the payment system is and all that, but definitely he'll be taking those shots, I'm sure, at big numbers. And then, you know, kind of the rest is just going to be the ones that are fun to watch. Deng Wei in China will be a definite one to watch. And then, like, Tian Tao will be – he's exciting in more just the spectacle of doing a giant clean and then – doing
praying,
whatever praying you call the thing he does in the jerk.
Yeah, you know, like a miss, jump 10 kilos, yeah. miss, jump 10 kilos, yeah, make a world
yeah.
record kind
that's
of
what,
thing.
That's what you want to see, just insanity from something like that.
Yeah, but that's exciting.
For sure, those are my top ones.
I think any of the sessions where someone can push the Chinese is going to be fun to watch. So
yeah.
What's the 73-kilo Chinese guy's name? Xi?
Yeah. Xi Jiang. Yeah, so that's CJ, and then there's another
that's Chinese
massive,
for CJ.
Hold on, Max, who is this... This guy that put up a bigger total than CJ did in the Pan American guy.
Did I don't
you
know.
See that?
I didn't see that.
Did CJ pass on the last? Man, I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
There's some Venezuelan, I want to say.
Oh, that's the same guy he went up against last year, I think.
Right. And this was actually.
Did he actually beat him? That seems odd.
It was at a different meet, but he put up bigger numbers than CJ did.
Oh, well,
and
yeah.
Here's the thing. You
could lift in your grandma. You could lift in your mother's basement and put up bigger numbers than CJ the right day.
It's one thing to lift in your grandmother's basement, but if you have those mortgage papers under your name, it's your basement. Okay? That's, by the way, a super inside joke. No one's going to understand it.
Anyways, yeah, I think those are for sure my picks for what's going to be most exciting. I think it will be interesting to see what's going down with Russia. If Russia's booted out, what their deal is, and that might influence China to push their super a little bit more. If Tatiana is not there. So that would be kind of an interesting event, I guess. Kind of neat to see if that unfolds.
Yeah. And then that could have some
yeah.
effect on
everything else.
Yeah. The situation closest to us, so if China's going to send super instead of 49 or,
yeah.
or what's going to happen. So, yeah, 2 weeks away. And it starts on what date? Maybe
the 19th?
So, yeah, about a little less than 3 weeks away, September 19th, and it'll be going on for 10-ish days there in Thailand, IWF World Championships. Alyssa Ritchie will be the first athlete up for the U.S., lot of stuff going on in terms of Olympic qualification, a lot of moving yeah. parts, what weight classes people decide to lift in, what countries are getting people, you know, sanctioned, how many sanctions it is, how many spots they have, robies, multipliers, and then of course the often overlooked part of Olympic qualification, who's lifting the most weights. That we'll also be looking at that part of things. But it should be a very exciting meet for USA Weightlifting, who's just been crushing it at these international meets.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be super exciting. I'm wondering about the stream or televised or whatever that means for them. I wish, if it was an online stream that was like as easy as watching, I mean, Pan Ams were super easy to watch. All of USA national meets are super easy to watch. I hope there's something like that for this world.
Yeah.
That would be great. That would be fantastic.
So, well, all right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk. Hopefully some of the people who, you know, they're searching for what they're supposed to do with their weightlifting training, we were able to steer them towards the light and answer these people's questions effectively. And yeah, I'm definitely excited as a fan to see what happens at Worlds, and of course rooting hard for our girl Alyssa Ritchie. So this is the Jug Life Podcast with Zach Tellender.
There yeah? we go. Got it.
Nice.
And Maximum Max Ada. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.